Vinny, you back? We're live.
Hello, everybody. Sorry about that. I was just outside. We're back, ladies and gentlemen, on the Vinny Eastwood Show, Revolution Radio. That's freedomslips.com. Listener-supported show, listener-supported network. That means you kind of got to support it. My very special guest joining me now, still, rather, are Bill Turner, Clint Richardson, and Mark Passio. Now, the other element to this equation is not just the legal arguments, and it's kind of comes down to force at the end of the day. Do you have the force necessary to back up your words, kind of thing? Like if somebody in a bar says, I can beat the crap out of you, and another person says, I can beat the crap out of you, and they stop at only words, you never figure out who wins. Whereas the government doesn't stop at only words. They have men with guns that can be yelled at through a telephone and storm down and destroy your life relatively quickly. And I've seen it happen many, 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 many times, too many times to count, with people who come up against the system. And these are people who aren't arguing even legal fictions or anything. These are people going around their ordinary lives and just have these government scumbags come in and destroy them, you know, for no other reason than they just want to take what you've got. How do we defend ourselves against such an enemy? Can we understand such an enemy?
I'll jump in there, Vinny, and say that the first way that you prevent an enemy like that from destroying you is you morally educate the young and get them to understand what rights truly are, that rights exist in nature, and rights are actions which do not cause harm to others. You know, this is part of the lack of understanding inside of humanity because we don't understand what natural law is. Again, it's part of the natural inherent world, not part of any kind of a fictional entity, not part of any kind of a construct in the mind, not part of any belief system. Rights are behaviors and behavior exists in the natural realm. This is part of the problem, that people think that behaviors which are rights can be somehow curtailed and somebody can prevent somebody from performing them because of what they say is allowed or not allowed, which is called man's law. And other people think that people have rights because they've been delegated by man's law to do these things that are coercive and violent. People think that they have these rights which do not exist. You know, rights are actions which do not cause harm to other beings, period. That's the definition. It's an apophatic definition, which means a definition given in the negative. Apophysis means you're saying what something is by defining what it is not. A right is an action that does not cause harm to another. So then what you have to really understand is what are the actions that cause harm that we should not be engaged in? You know, what are the transgressions against the natural law, against the natural world? Well, there's only a small listing of actions that really are violations against other beings and therefore violations against moral law. Murder, assault, rape, theft, trespass, and coercion. You don't engage in those behaviors, and you teach your young not to engage in those behaviors. And if they really understood that, they would never join any kind of entity of government, police, military, or otherwise. And therefore, you wouldn't have this kind of oppression going on because the population would be moral. In natural law, there's a simple correlation that relates freedom and morality. And it's essentially, as morality increases, freedom increases. As morality declines, freedom declines. When you have a population that doesn't understand what rights are and how they exist inherently in nature because of the nature of the behavior that is being performed, okay, and therefore they don't understand what you have a right to actually do in your behavior versus what you have no right to do through your behavior. When you have a population that is that ignorant, you have slavery. And that's all you can ever get as a result of that lack of moral understanding. When you have a population that does understand what rights are, and therefore is a moral population, you have a population that is going to receive through their behaviors that they are conducting in their lives, ever increasing amounts of freedom, and they're not going to be enslaved. They're not going to be able to be enslaved. Only an immoral population can ever become enslaved. So then you look at the state of the world and you understand it must be a result of the people of the world in the aggregate sense being immoral because they do not understand rights.
Well, it's kind of like if you know the Predator movie, how he rips that guy's spine out kind of thing. I think that's what's happened to humanity over the last 100 or so years, or at least in a very quick way in the last 100 or so years relative to the entirety of human history, where our moral backbone has literally been ripped out. Vertebrae by vertebrae, it's been taken from us.
Absolutely. And
how long does it take to regrow a spine of sufficient strength to stand up to the weight of what we're up against is my question.
Sadly, I think a heart needs to be regrown first, and a brain needs to be regrown. You know, people lack not only knowledge, but they don't care in the aggregate. I mean, there are some who do. I mean, I don't want to make a blanket statement about that, but, you know, until we as a people, in the aggregate sense, as a species, humanity develops a care about the true difference between right and wrong behavior. And then intellectually and as in a holistic sense, as far as intelligence, true intelligence goes, deeply understands the difference between right and wrong behavior, and then develops the will and courage to stand up against the people who refuse to learn that lesson and therefore are continuing to exhibit psychopathic behaviors, exactly nothing will change on this planet until those qualities are developed within the beings living on it.
And of course, with the psychopathic governments in charge of the education systems and so on and so forth, that's quite a big challenge indeed. Not one that can be changed entirely by one person. And I've said for a long time the tactic of the cactus is to protect itself in all directions with prickly spines. So anything that assails it, whether it's coming from either side or up above, winds up getting a little prick to remind it not to and to leave the cactus alone. And in this way, it doesn't matter which issue you're really talking about, whether it be the free man movement, whether it be radiation contamination or the corruption of the health industry, police brutality, etc., etc. There's always somebody fighting against that. And I'm just wondering, is it possible or is it even logical to attempt to coordinate it? Or is everybody acting as their little spine, their little prick in and of themselves and protect humanity that way, regardless of organization? Because once you add organization, once you add leaders into it, there is a head to the snake all of a sudden, which can be cut off.
Well, the concept of teaching, I agree absolutely, you know, teach your children well so that their father's hell will pass. What needs to be instilled in people and in our children is the sense of duty. Duty is the real concept, the backbone of a right. Because if other people don't feel the duty to protect everyone else's rights in nature, then there's no point in having rights because no one's there to respect them. So this is the concept of negative law. So natural and negative in the parlance of the legal concept of law are the same thing, whereas statutes, you know, public, code, and all the other types of law that we see and we participate in, contractual law, is what's called positive law. And I, you know, this was one of the most revealing things for me that helped me along in my journey to understand this. So if we're talking about a negative and a positive, we know that the only thing that can cancel out a positive is a negative. So when government comes in, again, mind control comes in and creates positive law, statutes and everything else, the only reason that a government would do that is to cancel out the negative law. So they tell you, hey, you have inalienable rights. Every state constitution starts in the United States, starts with the notion that we have inalienable rights. Not un, alienable, that would mean that they can't be sold. But inalienable rights means that you have the consensual, voluntary right, even if it's tacit and you've never volunteered in your life, you don't really need to know that you're volunteering is the point in legal parlance. You have the right to sell your God-given or natural negative state of being, if you want to call that rights, you can, your duty to everyone else, basically, and you can sell that for positive rights. But then, see, now you have no protection under the negative or natural law. You've given that up. You've turned your back on God, if you will, and you've accepted a membership in a club, basically. Now, the important part of this that really helped me to understand is to picture magnets. Now, this is not a physics lesson because it's incorrect physics. I'm just asking you to picture two magnets. When you try to put those magnets together, they repel each other. Everybody's experienced this. And that's how you can consider negative and positive law. Again, not in physics, but in just as a parable here. So if you try to push negative law and positive law together, they're automatically going to repel because the positive law is always designed to negate the negative law, to bring you into a positive state of being. What does negative mean? Negative simply means that you have the right not to be forced to do anything. Okay? And that's not all, though. It is your duty under the negative law to never force anything on anyone else. It's very simple when you put it that way. As far as positive law, this is where the word right or the word duty becomes legal or positive right. What is a right in the fiction? Well, we know a right can't exist in a fiction. It's called a right. It's by name only, as everything is in the fiction. So in positive law, you have the right to have things forced upon you. And that is the most important thing you need to know as a citizen. As a citizen, as a member, as an employee of the United States, employee just means use for your labor, you have the right under positive law to have anything at all forced upon you. That is your voluntary agreement as a contractual citizen of the United States. That is the nature of the contractual relationship. I recommend everybody go to U.S. Code Title 42, Section 1981, 42, 1981, and sit back and read that about 10 times because it literally says it's your right in this country as a citizen to be extorted, punished, put in pain, taxed, and everything else. Exaction. Go ahead, go ahead.
No. Finish your sentence. I just have something to add.
Well, exaction and extortion are basically the same thing. One is defined as the other. Exaction is like when a police comes and gives you a ticket. He's exacting money that does not belong to him, whereas government taxes you in the form of, say, property tax, which is an extortion, a rent, basically, on property.
Well, this reminds me of a conversation I had with a former prosecuting sergeant, Grace Hayden, for the New Zealand Police. 15 years she was spending the job. And she said, you actually only have three rights. Put up, shut up, or pay up.
It's about right. You know? I mean, in as a person, your rights are defined for you. They are not actual, as Mark alluded to them, negative rights and duties. They are positive rights and duties, so they're the absolute opposite. One, you know, natural means you can't be forced. Positive or statute means you must be forced.
Vinny, what she says is totally wrong, but that's what the police are led to believe. Now, if you go onto their website, you will see that the police commissioner says that they police by consent. But at the lower level, they use force all the time. And like you said earlier, whatever you say will be used against you. It's only what you say that can be used against you. Because if you say nothing, then they're helpless. There's nothing they can do. But at the lower levels, all they do is that put up, shut up, or pay up, which is absolute rubbish because the judge will decide that. But the courts that the police are prosecuting in are the summary courts where they have justices of the peace, and the justices of the peace are just members of the public who don't know a thing about law, and they will bulldoze you through. You do not have any rights in their courts. They're just getting a summary proceeding, and summary means to rush you to justice without any rights whatsoever.
It's ironic that the summary court will give you a rather wintry reception. I'm terrible with the jokes today. In fact, I'm just having a bad day. In fact,
we're laughing, but the mics are muted.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay,
that makes me feel a whole lot better.
I'd like to sort of move on just a little bit, Vinny, to raise it to a slightly higher level, because what's happening now is we are in the age of revelation, and everything's being revealed. The stuff that I've learned over the last 10 years is just unbelievable. We had no access to this stuff before, but now all of a sudden we're getting access to it through the internet, which is great. Now, one of the things I found, like, I know the Americans have got a Declaration of Independence, but we also had one, and Clendon, the American guy, came down here and helped them write it. Now, when I sat down and actually had a look at our 1835 Declaration of Independence, I realized it was a will. The will of the people. They said, we, the sovereign chiefs, blah, 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 blah. What they were saying was, it is our will to do this. So, having a look at the names on the document, I realized that all the chiefs were dead. So I posed the question, has this will been probated? And so, in a trip to the Murray Land Court, we found out that the will had not been probated. So what we need to do first is to free ourselves. You see, at the moment, because we have wrongly identified ourselves as the person and not as the living, we identified ourselves as the Holy Ghost and not the source document. So we have to rekindle our status as the living, so that we're no longer an abstract noun and we can be seen and heard. At that stage, we will probate the will, and this will bring in the new covenant, or the age of Aquarius.
Do you believe in that kind of age shifting, things like that, Mark?
When you get to my age, you know what age is, Vinny.
I'm about to turn 30. Trust me, I'm starting to get a picture.
Vinny, I would say that I do have an appreciation for the concept of cycles, meaning opportunities that are kind of present themselves as lessons for us to either incorporate, learn, and grow from, or to ignore, and therefore kind of like repeat the class, so to speak. I don't think the same thing occurs. I would say it's like that old adage, you know, history repeats itself if we ignore the lessons that it has to teach us. A lot of people leave that part out of it. I look at cycles and time periods as learning opportunities. And if we get them, then maybe we can go up, you know, like up the spiral, so to speak. And if we don't get them, then, you know, we may get taken down a notch, or we have to learn through chaos and pain. And I think that's the kind of time period that humanity is entering into right now. I think we've kind of rejected knowledge. We've rejected a deep understanding of natural law principles. We've rejected concept of wisdom through right action in the world. And as a result, we've gone into deep bondage. And I think, only more suffering is going to be heaped upon humanity as a result of that lack of knowledge. And I think the only way out of that is for people to take their minds out of the entire artificial world, to take their mind out of the realm of illusion, to really deeply understand that the only thing that is ultimately creating reality is the behaviors that people enact. And that's what free will is all about. The creator of the universe gifted us with free will. as free beings. We have the right to decide which actions we will perform or not perform, regardless of whatever amount of manipulation or mind control techniques or methods of, you know, social conditioning are thrown at us. Ultimately, free will comes down to an individual choice of whether or not you're going to take a specific behavior that either causes harm to another being or does not. And everybody has the, not only the right and the duty, but they actually possess the free will choice to either take that behavior or not. It all ultimately comes down to that choice. Most people want to try to abdicate the responsibility for that choice to someone else. And that is also a fiction. That is also something that cannot actually be done in nature. Ultimately, we are always responsible for the behaviors that we choose, and we can never abdicate that responsibility to anyone else.
I was kind of thinking about this in terms of, you know, in those beautiful swanky party ballrooms that you kind of see in the movies or what have you, they got that giant pyramid stack of champagne glasses, and they pour these giant bottles of champagne, and it kind of overflows one glass and then fills up the next and the next all the way down the chain. Is that sort of how this resistance is working? Like in terms of global resistance, I'm not isolating it to the free man, sovereign, straw man movements. In fact, can we come up with a new pseudonym, you know, something that actually describes it without having to describe all three, because it's taking effing ever. But is that how it's actually working? And just eventually, once the champagne from the top, from everybody who's had to stay up there so long, fighting so hard without a terribly large amount of recognition or reward, will it eventually filter down to the bottom and send the whole pyramid itself come tumbling down?
Well, I'll try that, Vinny, because I believe that everyone has a piece of the jigsaw puzzle, and it's only by sharing our pieces and everyone stepping up to the table and putting their piece on the table that the knowledge will raise the frequency of all those out there in radio land to a high enough vibration that it will become common knowledge, like the 100 monkey syndrome.
I very much agree with that sentiment. The way I look at it, Vinny, is instead of like a pyramid structure where it's trickling down from the top, if you're familiar at all with BitTorrent or distributed networking, distributed file sharing, I think it kind of works like that. As Bill was saying, you know, we all have pieces to bring to the table, and we bring a little bit of that, and then we share it all. And then eventually we all, you know, have the total file, so to speak, in the BitTorrent analogy, if you're familiar with how it works. It's really how this knowledge sharing is going to work throughout the world, and that's why it's so important for people that have any part of information to share, of important information to share with others, to step forward and bring that information to the table. And only when we're all doing that great work of sharing the truth and sharing the information that we have come to know, are we going to change the aggregate body of humanity for the better?
See, I'm not 100% sure whether or not I'm like so full of truth and facts and everything for people to listen to, but I try
You're
to compensate
too modest.
For that. Well, I just want to give amplification to voices who know things that I don't, so that other people can benefit for their knowledge as well as I.
What are you talking about? I learned what douchebaggery is from you.
Scumbaggery. You haven't learned a thing.
Scumbaggery, but douchebaggery too. In America, we call them douches. I want to say, I actually have to duck out, and I apologize. This was kind of a last-minute thing. But I agree wholeheartedly that we are in this sense of revelation, okay? Meaning that we are in the midst of a massive disclosure of basically all of our collective enslavement. Now, the problem is we have disclosure without consequence. Right now, everything is being disclosed that is not just from people like Vinny Eastwood and all these guys, but also from the mainstream media. I mean, you have the alternative and mainstream media completely disclosing everything, the worst possible crimes from pedophilia to you know, everything, that the Pope is the Antichrist. Everything is being disclosed. The problem is, as we've been talking, is that we are not proverbing. We are not doing anything about it. And that's the thing that needs to change. So what needs to be very, very clear to people is that what we don't want, and this is going to sound strange, is we don't want a revolution. Because what is the definition of revolution? It means
to go in a circle.
It means to go right back to where we started from. So if you look at things like the Titler cycle, where it go, you know, each civilization and each cycle goes through these different, you know, from bondage to spiritual awakening and then to dependence and then back to bondage. And it just recycles. It just revolves in this continuing cycle. That's what we don't want to happen. In this day and age, we have the capability of actually creating something that'll never let that happen again. So we can actually move forward. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily progress, because nowadays it seems like progress is just basically promoting itself. Progress for absolutely no reason. Hey, let's test the limits of nature and see what we can mutate and GMO and everything else. So, you know, progress has to be limited to morals and values as well. Like I said, I have to go. I did want to promote Mark. I'm sure was going to anyway. Mark and Bob Tuscan and myself and many others are going to be speaking at the Free Your Mind conference in Philadelphia in April, and that's Free Your Mind. What is it? FreeYourMindConference.com. I think
that's
it is.
That's correct.
Yes, yes. Hey, there you go. And I look forward to having all you guys on my show as well. My show's on Republic Broadcasting, and as well as Mark's. Mine's Monday through Friday from, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific. And then I also just wanted to say, it's ironic that you asked me this. I'm hoping to have out in April before that conference. I decided to write a book finally. I've spent 10 years doing this, everything for free and giving everything away. And I decided to write a non-profit, public domain book that'll be available for trade or barter. Not going to be in my name. It's not going to be published. It's not going to be any of that. It's not going to have any numbers or barcodes or anything. It's going to be, you can copy it, whatever. And that's going to be out in April. It's actually called, ironically, it's called Straw Man, The Real Story of Your Artificial Person. So I'm hoping to have that out. And it's going to be like an indexed sort of guidebook through all these words that we're talking about and explaining the difference between, of course, the fiction and reality or nature. So I appreciate it, Vinny. Keep doing what you're doing. And thank you, gentlemen, for doing what you're doing, and I'll catch you guys later.
Clint, I want to say thanks for taking part in the panel discussion. It was a pleasure to be on it with you, and I'll see you in person at the Free Your Mind 3 conference in April.
I look forward to that. I love meeting people that are not just digital friends anymore. It's so great. All right, guys, yeah. Take care.
All right. When you seal that digital friendship with a real hug, there's something magical there. Oh, yeah. But anyway, speaking on more serious issues, I wanted to spend the last half hour that we've got here speaking about trauma and actually how it affects people, because I was just thinking about post-traumatic stress disorder or whatever the heck made-up condition you want to think. Some people get their, let's just say, their fuse gets shortened. A lot of people have a fuse that, like, it takes an hour to kind of wear you down with abuse and questioning your motives and accusing you of stuff and whatever before you flip your lid. Other times it starts to become instant. And I'm not 100% sure exactly what the cause of this is, but my theory is that you will get traumatized by psycho scumbags if you try to resist them directly. And as a result of resisting directly psycho scumbags, you kind of start to turn into one of them to a degree if you're not careful. Have you guys noticed this?
Absolutely, Vinny. They're practiced in the art, and they know that once they break you down, you can't shut up. But they will try every trick in the book, including walking out and leaving you locked up, coming back, a different one will come in. They use all sorts of stuff to wear you down. But that little room, that processing room that they put you in, is cold. It's not very inviting.
Yeah, well, I think the point here is that what was it Dante's Inferno said? He said, when you look into hell, sometimes hell stares back at you. And I think there kind of needs to be rest and recovery periods in between your activism, because I don't know. It's like, can you do permanent damage to somebody's personality if you're working yourself to the bone kind of thing, can you do actual permanent damage to your ability to deal with regular social situations because you've literally hurt your brain with sleep deprivation, with stress, with trauma in the process?
Sure. You could definitely burn yourself out. I mean, I've felt like that from time to time because of how hard I've pressed. And I know, much work that you've put into this whole movement and, you know, the schedule that you operate on, it's got to be very difficult. The people who are doing the quote great work, really we have hardly anyone to tag out to, if you know what I mean. You know, we're in this fight for the long haul, and, our will and our care is not going to allow us to stay out of it for very long, but it is important to take, you know, respites, to take periods of, you know, using some time periods to reinstitute some balance in our lives, because this is an extreme thing. When the world falls into a state of darkness and decay and moral dissolution, the people who are doing this great work, the brunt of it is all upon their shoulders. And it's a very small group of people at the current time in history who are sharing information like this and who know it deeply. And so, you know, you do have to eventually take time for yourself. You can't, you know, go over, too much toward the other side of imbalance and then turn, you know, fall asleep again and kind of like, you know, not worry about what's going on in the world. But I think for the people who really understand what is taking place here, they won't do that, and they'll try to strike that balance somehow. To go back to your concept of, you know, when you're dealing with psychopathic people and people who are conducting violence, and at some point, if you were, you know, to engage that, you have to be very careful that you do not become one of them as well. The goal here is not to become so left brain imbalanced that you could just conquer the other lesser left brain imbalanced people, or the ones who, you know, engage you to begin with. The real solution would, of course, be healing that brain imbalance so you don't have a bunch of, you know, people with psychopathic tendencies from left brain imbalance. But I would say once we're in this situation, yes, is it true that a revolution would be like a failure? I've said that from day one. I don't want to see it come to anything like that, because I'm not looking for war. I want peace to reign over the earth. I want people to essentially respect human rights, to understand what rights are, and to leave other people alone and just not start trouble, not coerce them, not start violence with them, you know? But for people who... A whole society that has basically built up a false belief system in the fictional domain that is so out of touch with the actual laws of nature and the real natural world. They're such in that psychopathic mind state, a lot of these dominators, that they're not going to listen to reason. They're not going to understand anything but what they're told. They want what's happening. They love it. They can't get enough of it. They're sick people. They're brain damaged people. They're mentally ill. I'm not using those as metaphors. I'm saying literally they're sick, mentally ill, brain damaged individuals that don't care about what's right or wrong and are going to listen to whatever their orders come down and then just act without thinking because they hate themselves. See, you can't act like that unless you have total self-loathing at work in your being. You have to be a self-hater to be an order follower. Nobody who is truly a self-loving being and has developed a deep self-respect within themselves could continue to be a follower of someone else's orders. That's the definition of not exercising conscience, of not actively choosing willfully the difference between right and wrong behavior for yourself. So all of these order followers, okay, they think they can abdicate their personal responsibility to choose between right and wrong, but that it can't be done in nature, as I've already said. Where that comes from, that desire to abdicate that responsibility, is from earlier traumatic experiences. Okay, it's they're wrestling with abandonment issues, they're wrestling with self-loathing issues, they're wrestling with lack of self-respect, unresolved trauma, feelings of inadequacy, feelings of unworthiness.
That sounds exactly like the attributes of a person that a psychopath looks to feed on.
That's right. And they look to do their bidding to people like that. And unfortunately, for a paycheck or for some petty sense of illusory power, most of these secondary psychopaths are all too willing to give their body, their mind, their energy, and their free will over to the psychopaths that are basically running the world. And not only that, enslaving them and their family, even whether the order followers know it or not, and to continue to do their bidding, even though these people have basically made it known that they hate these people more than anybody else, call them their animals, call them their dogs, okay, treat them as such, and you know, they're willing to do that just for the pittance that they're thrown in their little slop trough, you know, that, you know, get given their house and their mobile car, you know, their ability to make a little bit of cash, and you know, a title and a uniform and, again, an illusory sense of power over others. And for that little pittance that they're thrown, they're willing to enslave not only themselves, but future generations. Until we engage those individuals, and I don't mean physically engaging them, but, you know, if it has to come to that, you know, it'll have to come to that. We need to be engaging them in the realm of face-to-face encounters in their personal lives. Not even in their role as an order follower and a, you know, quote, law enforcer. We need to engage them in their personal lives as individuals. And where I'm going to start moving into my material, talking about this deeply, is the role that women can actually play in that social interaction. Because women are not stepping into the role as the people who can truly and deeply instill a sense of moral qualities and moral fiber throughout society. They've largely stepped out of that, sadly, very unfortunately, and many of them think that, you know, it's a good thing that they stepped out of that, when in fact it was highly destructive to the entire people of the earth when women took on a different role as opposed to that traditional role as the nurturers and the ones who brought in a sense of morality into the young. More so than anyone else, they have the ability to step up to these, quote, dominators and these order followers and really get up in their face and really challenge their worldview if they wake themselves up out of illusion, you know. And when they do that on a one-to-one individual basis, I think we're going to see some progress in some of these order followers starting to develop a modicum of a conscience. But it's going to be women's role in that process is so incredibly important. And again, that's why I think I want to, you know, go back to some of the work that I did on the non-supportive dominators and the non-supportive order followers and really deeply emphasize the aspect of the power that women can have in that transformative process.
Mark Passio, ladies and gentlemen, releasing his own brand of cornflakes soon enough, full of moral fiber. And I wanted to go back to what Clint said as he left us, you know, keep up the good work, Vinny. And I was like, and then you mentioned, Mark, is about the moral fiber that we have. It doesn't actually allow us to not keep up the good work kind of thing.
Exactly.
But we understand our physical limitations that That's we can't right. continuously work. I mean, like, for example, anybody who criticizes a person for doing what we do and then just taking time off or something to recuperate, do you sleep? At the night time, you know, I mean, you've got physical needs, don't you? Do you take a day off here or there, or get away
contrary
from the kids for a night to go drink some malt liquor? You know,
contrary to popular belief, Vinny, I am human.
If you say so. And I was thinking about, you also mentioned there about how these people who are enforcing it, and I think Bill's had a bit of experience in this thing about these people who are sort of mentally ill and sort of morally bankrupt, right? And this can actually be accomplished with very simple mind control techniques like sleep deprivation, repetition, and a silo mentality that ostracizes outsiders who say anything different. And that's the staple diet of law students and medical students and a lot of other forms of things, your political office. and whatnot in important positions. Those are the things that actually happen to you, and it works to shut down your higher brain functions and turn you into a mindless drone who just comes into this bureaucratic mindset where it's not about creativity, it's not about exceptions to the rules, it's not about bending things to suit individuals and make things purposeful and meaningful on an individual basis. It's about applying a set of standards regardless. Yeah? And it seems to me that this also winds up creating counter to it, well, at least it's supposed to be counter to it, are people of who don't think there are any rules at all. You know, like another false choice, like the perception versus reality crowd. Now, I asked a question before on Facebook a few weeks ago. If perception was reality, does that mean what you allow magically disappears also? Mm-hmm. Doesn't, does it?
Vinny, you're absolutely 100% correct with what they do to the lawyers, the doctors, etc. Once you get on that treadmill, you just do not ever have time to think. And there's also the other evil part that comes in too, and that's the money. So how I actually got on this road was by actually turning my back against all those, and I haven't worked since 2005. Well, not in a full-time role. I've devoted my life to studying this, to find out, to crack the code. And the moment, what I did back in 2005 is I said, I want to be provided for. So I put it out to the universe to be provided for. And it's amazing. The moment you come off that treadmill, your brain opens up. And watching the latest remake of Total Recall, they absolutely know what's going to happen. They say, quick, you've got to bring them in. The computer program's deleting. We've got to reprogram them.
I think that's another thing is to be aware of false choices, you know. Hey, bro, do you want me to knock you real hard with my left hand or my right hand? I'm still going to get knocked real hard, bro. And there's a lot of false choices out there. And like, I don't know. It's almost as if we need to be able to decipher things for ourselves, because nobody's actually ever going to tell you like the whole truth. And even if they were, you wouldn't actually be able to verify it with three sources who didn't know each other, who looked at it objectively and verified it, you know, in the journalistic sense of the word. So a lot of the time we're actually just operating on belief. I believe that person is correct. I believe that person is moral and just. What if they're not? How would you know? If you didn't investigate, if you didn't question, right? And the same thing is absolutely true of some people in our movement. And it seems to be the proclivity towards infighting gets really, really big when you actually directly respond and feed the beast. And what it does to the audience is it actually muddies the waters. If you see two people who are having the conflict of ideas, because you've gotten into the point of just believing what people say without verifying it for yourself in a journalistic way, and I'm speaking from experience here because this used to happen to me, you don't actually know who's telling the truth, and as a result, you switch off completely and don't want to listen to either side anymore, even if they are the one telling you the truth. And something you've got to be really, really careful of. And I think it really does come down to one thing, though. What are you actually prepared to take action on? Right? If you're not prepared to take action on something, in my opinion, the importance of you knowing it absolutely implicitly is slightly less than if you are actually willing to put your life, your money, and your family and your future on the line.
That's
in order
right.
To devote yourself to it.
And Vinny, you know, this is all about, as I've said, taking this into the realm of action. When people get trapped in intellectual debate, and like you said, the people that come in and try to drive wedges between, you know, because of different, you know, aspects or constructs that people put forward and, you know, divide people, that's an actual disruption tactic by the people who are paid by the control system or have a vested interest in wanting to see this control system perpetuated for whatever their reasons may be. You know, ultimately what you need is to share common ground. And that's why I feel that my work in natural law is so important. If you understand what the laws of morality are, they need to simply be the common ground. And that's what conscience is. Conscience it comes from Latin roots. Con in Latin means together or with. And then the word science comes from the Latin scio, the verb scio, sciere in Latin, which means to know or to understand. Well, you put those roots together and you have to know together, to understand together, a framework of common knowledge, common sense. That's what conscience is. That needs to be the common framework, the common foundational ground upon which we stand, the firm footing upon which we all stand together and understand that together. You know, that level of common sense is the difference between the knowledge of the difference between right and wrong behaviors. If we all get on that same page and then enact that within our lives, you know, actually take action, right action upon those principles, there is no force that could ever possibly enslave us if we are acting within those rights.
I've always wanted to see somebody who actually knows how to get out of a ticket or something like that. See somebody pulled up on the side of the road and actually stop your car behind the cop car and then walk up and start policing the police officer and then ask the person in the car, do you want me to advocate for you and get you out of this ticket? That would be really irritating, especially for the traffic cops in New Zealand. If you fail the normal police exam, you can still become a traffic cop, even though you're a failed police officer, except you don't have the ability to arrest anybody for a crime. It's kind of like being a glorified security guard of the road, and you have the flashy lights. And incidentally, in order to make them more intimidating in New Zealand, they said, no, the blue uniforms for real cops. The fake cops, we want to give them black uniforms. Yeah, you can't make this stuff up, bro.
Part of their new cult training, you know, like you alluded to earlier, Vinny, it's the whole training for these dominators in society is practically identical to the techniques that cults have used throughout history. You know, isolate them from the rest of the community, make them all look and, you know, talk the same. Keep repeating and repeating and repeating the same things to them to indoctrinate and brainwash them, and then put them through, you know, physical abuse that traumatizes them, you know, lack of sleep, you know, put them on a horrible diet with low nutrients, you know. It totally affects the brain. It puts them through mental and emotional trauma. And, sooner or later, then, you know, they're acting as basically robots who can't think for themselves anymore. Same techniques have been used throughout history on any cult. And in any cult, and, you know, people have a hard time seeing how the dominators and controllers of our society are cult members. They're religious.
Can I interject
members.
Here? Because sure. The CIA figured out that mind control is addictive. Sure. That's half the reason why people don't want to learn about mind control, because they're freaking addicted to it.
Absolutely.
We crave subjugation in a very real sense, don't we? We actually want somebody to be there to save us. Even though we intellectually know that it's the wrong thing to do, it's always nice to feel like being part of the in crowd. It's something that's kind of natural in our history, isn't it, Mark?
Like, it's propagated through a lot of people, even in the so-called freedom movement, who want to say that, you know, oh, certain groups are going to come in and rescue us. You know, there's people trying to take down, you know, the Fed. There's people trying to take down the international bankers, people trying to take down, you know, the Vatican, et cetera. And it's like, this is the hopium religion, the religion of somebody else has it in hand. You know, they're going to take care of it for us. We don't need to take any action. I don't need to really learn anything new or different or change my worldview or my belief system. You know, it's in someone else's hands. It's such a very dangerous, proposition to accept. And I think people who talk like that should be viewed with a tremendous amount of skepticism, or put out information that, you know, this group or that group, it's in their hands and they have it, and we need to sit back and just watch or wait and, you know, see what happens. It's a very, very dangerous proposition. You know, when you don't take personal responsibility into your own hands to change things for the better, especially when total injustice is taking place all around us to other people, you know, we're essentially, through our complicity and through through our silence, exercising in complicity with those immoral behaviors that are being conducted, often in our name, in the name of the people of a particular country or community. And again, only when people rise up in mass and say no and decide we are not going to participate in that control game, in that system, would I say that there's really a mass awakening taking place. People ask me a lot, you know, what would it take for you to say humanity is truly waking up? And I say, so many people quitting their jobs as controllers, as people who work for government, police, military, etc., the mainstream media, quote unquote mainstream media, would actually have to start commenting on it and saying we can't find people to go into these institutions anymore. They're falling apart completely because no one wants to take part in them. When that happens, I'll make the statement publicly, the world is waking up, but not until that happens.
I don't quite agree with you, although that has been true in the past. When I started on this journey, I could talk to maybe five people, and now more and more people, you know, I see it happening daily. You'd see it too, Vinny, by the number of people that click onto your YouTube or onto your site. It's growing and growing and growing. And what we're actually talking about is a 2% consciousness shift to overcome the evil that you're talking about. Their mind control techniques and that will, once we wake enough people up, just overthrows it automatically. We don't have to do a great deal.
Yeah, it's kind of like what they call a critical mass, but I've said ironically, in order to reach critical mass, you need to be able to teach the masses to think critically. And, that's quite a challenge indeed. Well, we're coming very close to the end of the broadcast. I don't know exactly when it's going to happen. It could be like 5-10 minutes from now. There's always been some kind of weird thing going on with it, with the network thing because of my theme songs or something. I don't know what it is, but we're gonna meander, and it's going to be fun. I have a couple of notes to say on your gentleman's points. The first one was about zebras. All right. Now, they've found, and this was quoted on a good film called I Am Fishhead about psychopaths, that if a herd of zebras is getting wise to a lion, it actually only takes about 6% of the zebras in the herd to be aware that there's a lion before the entire herd is instantly aware. This is what we call the 100th monkey syndrome. And I think these are these very important points. However, I also noticed that back throughout history, these quote-unquote revolutions, which of course haven't worked in the long term because we all get lapsed back into licentiousness or whatever, it never takes like more than 5% of people to actively be involved in a revolution in order for one to happen. And this revolution that we're talking about here is kind of like a quarantine revolution. Let me define that. Quarantine your television. It's not to be watched anymore. Quarantine your taxes. They're not to be paid anymore. Quarantine the big, nasty, ridiculous agrochemical companies like Monsanto that are genetically modifying and destroying everything. You know? This is about it. There's so many millions of different ways that you can resist this entire agenda just by quarantining certain elements of this viral attack on humanity. Right? Now,
Non-compliance is what it all comes down to. Saying
non-participation.
No.
You know,
saying no to evil. Yep.
You can't be a spectator in this. I mean, here's a simple question to ask yourself, you know, on a day-to-day basis. How many hours today have I spent consuming, watching, and being entertained by other people's content or other people's creations in some way? It doesn't matter whether it's a piece of technology or a film or a video game or whatever. How many hours have you spent consuming other people's creations versus creating something? Okay? You'll know you have passed the Rubicon when you spend more hours per day creating your own things that contribute to the global expansion of consciousness, human knowledge, discovery, and invention. Okay? You'll know you've passed that Rubicon when you're spending more hours a day creating than consuming, because we're not meant to be consumers. We're not here to just eat and drink and slurp everything dry. We're here to create. We're here to contribute. We're here to manifest things into reality and to talk about things that really matter. Because if you're not talking about things that matter all the time, you're getting to the point where you don't even care about things that matter anymore. You wear a mask for so long that you don't care and you're apathetic and what have you, that you forget who you are when you put that mask on. All right? It's the same reason why you have to quit your job. You can't keep putting that mask on every day and say, yes, I'm okay with doing this and not contributing more or less to humanity in a more fruitful and terrible fashion. Everything changes when you take that leap. Everything that you thought wasn't possible, everybody who tells you, no, you're not going to get enough money, you're not going to have this, you're not going to have that, you'll be surprised. They're absolutely right. Whatever it is that needs to support you, whether it's donations or food or whatever, isn't there. But when you have the decision to quit your job and go and do what you want to do, it turns up only exactly when you need it. It doesn't prepare you for it. It doesn't give you notice. When you are exactly at that point where you're screwed and you think about giving up, that's when something will happen to encourage you along. If you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, if you're here being who you really are and not somebody else's plaything. And here's a quote from the Avengers. There's no throne. There's no version of this where you come out on top. Maybe your army comes and maybe it's too much of us. Maybe it's too much for us, but it's all on you. Because if we can't protect the earth, you can be damn well sure we'll avenge it.
Absolutely beautiful. I mean, and you hit the nail right on the head. This is about each individual making the decision to do that great work for themselves. And putting that knowledge back out there for other people to take in. It's not about just accumulating and consuming more and more. It's about once you have an accurate understanding, helping someone else to get to that understanding as well. You know, and through that process, we pull each other up. You know, that's what the great work is. That's the essence of it. It's about sharing and it's about getting involved on that spiritual plane, on that spiritual battlefield, if you will, and doing that work for yourself. And you do that by creating content. You do that by putting information out there for other people. You do that by directly engaging other people about what's really important. So I'd say absolutely beautifully said, Vinny. Couldn't have put it any better myself. I wholeheartedly concur.
Yep, I have to agree there, Vinny. That was brilliant. And the more people that actually step up, you see, some of us are better at researching. Some, like yourself, are better at talking. Everyone's got a special talent. And it's when everyone starts to share those talents with the world, then we'll crack it.
Well, the trick is to never lose hope, never lose faith. And but again, I'll reiterate, you don't really have a choice, okay? You have a That's lack right. of options. It's unfair, I know, but life is unfair, okay? Anybody who tells you differently is selling something. Probably something not very satisfying. I was just sick of people trying to say that you can solve the world's problems and you don't have to feel pain, you don't have to be depressed, you don't have to... Dude, actually, I say the opposite. You have to feel pain, you have to feel depressed, and that's how you realize that you're still alive. Do you stroke yourself in a dream or do you pinch yourself? Because it's pain that makes you realize that you're not dreaming.
And to awaken. Yeah, that's right. You know, if anybody is trying to sell people on the idea that doing the great work is somehow going to make you more happy and more peaceful, you know, I think that's a pipe dream as well. I agree with you, Vinny. You know, this is about becoming uncomfortable. This is about creating discord within the existing immoral system. You know, it's about breaking things down. The truth is a destructive process. It breaks down that which is the illusion to make more room for growth of what's real. And taking part in that process can often be a painful thing. It can often wear you out. And again, we talked about having to take time, you know, for yourself in many ways to rejuvenate and, you know, redevelop that willpower to go back onto the battlefield again. What we ultimately need is more people stepping up and more people doing that work. As the old saying goes, many hands make for light work. And maybe some of that pressure could be relieved. It would still be work, but if we engage in it together, you know, the stress and pressure on each individual could be, that burden could be lessened a little bit.
Well, I think that's it really, in a nutshell. I'd like to thank you guys for coming on with me. It's a shame we couldn't have, I wanted so many people to be on this panel discussion, but it was so awesome that I think it'll do, you know? Isn't it good,
Vinny,
enough?
The topic is great.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting us on. It's great to get the message out there to those who are up and coming and following in our footsteps.
Vinny, thanks so much for inviting me to participate. The topic was great. The discussion with the other gentlemen was great. Always illuminating. Your contributions to the discussion were brilliant. And, we have to do this again sometime.
Yeah. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in. This is, I remind you, a listener-supported broadcast, and I know that it's holiday season and everything, and you've got your family to worry about and the presents to buy and the trips to take and the ecstasy too. And there is a serious, serious need for donations in my household in particular at the moment. We desperately need a new vehicle. If there's anybody out there who is willing to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and contribute, or even sign up for a monthly donation so we don't have to keep begging for them quite so often, it'd be really, really lovely. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again sometime at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.